Welcome to the Ethics Experts, where we're elevating ethics and compliance and HR to the strategic level it's supposed to be.
Welcome to the Ethics Experts. I'm here with Antonio Fernandez of Grow Up, Grow Out. How you doing, Tone?
I'm doing fine.
Thank you so much for joining us today. You're someone I have followed for a long time, and I've been really excited to get you on the Ethics Experts to talk about, you know, love in a corporate setting. What does that look like? And what does love in public policy look like? And how does that feed into culture and inclusivity in the organizations that we are stewards of?
Yes, sir. Yes. Let's get into it.
So what is it like right now in your neck of the woods? We're all in kind of self-quarantine down here with the coronavirus ripping through the nation. What's happening on your side of the fence?
So while I live in Baltimore, Maryland, in a place called Ellicott City. And we're doing well. The governor just put all stores closed down, and we got a little movement for things that are emergency. Me, my wife, and my child are on self-quarantine because we got a friend that comes from New York, and in his, you know, not knowing, he didn't know, and we got informed. So we did what's safe. And I'm telling America and everyone, be safe. Act as you do. I'm one of the dudes that are over 50. I got asthma. So this disease is dangerous to people like me. And even though I consider myself young, I'm doing the right thing and self-quarantining me and my family. So if we do got it, we deal with it as a unit. But if we don't, we protected others through that phase that we could be a danger to our own, the people we love in our community.
Yeah, that's a responsible thing. You know, it's a scary thing that everyone's kind of dealing with. But to take that self-quarantine, to think about the people around you, is what we all need to be doing right now to do our part so we don't keep this thing kind of ripping through our healthcare system.
And what's more stressing to me is I'm not the food industry, right? I'm in the people saving business.
Right.
So I run two youth facilities. So they are in an ecosystem like my fish tank that always is in decay, but if something comes, it spreads quick and
right.
It affects all the youth. So Grow Up, Grow Out had to think of a way, what does love look like in an epidemic? And the kids are most vulnerable because this is stressing them out. They worry for their mothers, they worry the court. Everything is in that little cell. So my staff, which we call the credible messengers, we work where each day they go an hour and a half through their shift instead of 8-hour shift. And they stay their distance. They go from there to their home without touching the community, because they know they got to self-quarantine to keep the kids safe if they're going to continue to visit New Beginnings where we provide our service. That's a sacrifice. They don't self-quarantine just to protect the kids so they could still go to work, so they could tell you, we love you, your family as well, this is the reality of this, we got you, don't worry, things will come back to normal, trust us, we're here. And if we're not there, it's just the kids could go into a panic.
Right.
Thank God that the Mayor Bowser and Clinton Lacey considered the credible messenger as a need of public assistance to keep the kids who don't got parents, who are on the streets, that are homeless. Credible messengers are looking for them, telling them how to get off the streets and the services we could provide to give them safe through this. People ain't thinking about that. And that's what Mayor Bowser and us have developed a team that's watching that closely.
So tell us about Grow Up, Grow Out. Tell us about the purpose of your organization and how the credible messengers are making an impact in the lives of these kids.
So Grow Up, Grow Out, you know, it's my small business. I got my license in 2015, but Grow Up, Grow Out pretty much came to existence in 1998, 1999, after I was sentenced to a 13 and a half years in federal penitentiary. I was then the federal penitentiary sentenced me to 3 years without human contact because of who I was in the leadership of a street organization called the Almighty Latin King and Queen Nation New York State Lion Tribe. So being the CEO of that group got me that sentence that then sentenced me to be a danger to the community in the facilities. In this solitude for 3 years, I started to master my craft of leadership, street leadership, of organizational skills, of what I did to transform the brand of the Latin Kings to the most feared organization in 3 years to the most accepted in the community as activists. I wanted to practice that that equation that made me successful in that. So I took that 3 years of solitary confinement to talk to my Almighty Father, King of Kings, God, to myself, and to master my craft. So I was born in a cell, and then in 99, I came home to Virginia, my wife, a new life. And I started to come back, make amends with my communities for the failures I did as the leader of that organization, accept the responsibility, and Tom teach me and accept me because I got this remedy to violence. And I got this thing that I, in a lab for 3 years, the Lord spoke to me, and it's called oppression leads to aggression that leads to violence. You cannot heal someone when they're oppressed, and you cannot help them after they committed the act. You got to relieve oppression that brings down the aggression in the community, in the kids, in the mind, in the soul, then that's the teachable moment in the community. Then you could come with a remedy and debate and talk in a safe space to make the violence at least be minimal, and that our kids are not hunters, but it's a fact of a big society that sometimes accidental violence occurs, but it isn't the method of a madness.
So there's so much to unpack in what you just talked about. You know, I find it so interesting, first of all, that, you know, a lot of consultants come into businesses and they talk about organizational development and they talk about coming in and fixing the culture of a business. And when you talk about your role in the Latin Kings, where you turned it from this sort of street gang to really this power group that was really focused more on activism, that was really focused more on its community, that was a dramatic transformation that you were able to help drive. So I'd love you to speak to that a little bit, because I think that that the roots of that ended up kind of blooming into the tree of Grow Out, Grow Out.
Yeah. So right when I first inherited, because I was a member of this organization, and I joined in 89 in a jail called Rockers Island. I was a youth. I've lost belief in the community. I lost the urgency of family. I really didn't want to believe in Jesus no more. His perfection was beyond reach. So to go in and be in East New York in a poor neighborhood in Brooklyn, and the person that your family is learning to compare you to and for you to succeed as Jesus, that's a big thing to accomplish in where I was growing up. And it became something I despised because perfection was so far from it, from where I was at. I was trying to find myself. What is a Puerto Rican? Where do I fit in this ghetto? Right? So in that brand, I got lost. I got lost in finding myself. I lost belief in society. I got addicted to drugs. I sold drugs. I was the community's worst enemy. And then I ended up where most young adults end up, in Rockers Island, waiting for the justice system to decide my future. I have good parents. They've been married now 56 years.
Wow.
I got four sisters that graduate, went to college, are married, have kids. So if you right now listening, forget about the broken home syndrome, crackhead mother, starving. I hated poverty. I hated that the American dream on TV was so much harder to accomplish than the one in my neighborhood. The things that I had to get to prove to America that I was equal, that I fit in, that I needed a BMX bike, that I needed an RACA racetrack, that I needed a $4 box of cereal. What my parents could provide was never what I was told on TV that made you a good kid, that made your family fit in. So I was such a capitalistic pig that I said, if I can't get it the way the values and the things that my parents gave me, I'll take it the fast way. I'll gain it the fast way. And Rockers Island, thank God for the Almighty Latin King Queen Nation. There was guys before me, dope fiends, addicts, that were in that environment of a cell and disparity. And they were waiting for kids like me coming in broken. And instead of being culture vultures, and stealing us, they took me in my most confused way. They became my Marines. They became my Boy Scouts. He said, I'm going to teach you to read. I'm going to teach you to not be a savage in what you did to your community. So when you leave us, you can leave here educated and defend yourself on these ruts that have been set up for our people and our community to end up where you at, Tone. And it was the first time I heard hope.
And they took that as an opportunity not to kind of dig you deeper into that hole you were in, but to help kind of build you out of that hole.
Shit, that was the hole.
Right.
I was so confused that I didn't know what was Puerto Rican. I knew what was black. I knew what was white. I didn't know what was me.
Right. They gave you that identity.
Yeah, and he told me, wait, a Puerto Rican is this. It's Puerto Rico. You've never been there. Oh, this is what it looks like. Do you know about Lolita Labron? Do you know about Arisu Campo? Do you know our culture? Do you know that we are the only one of the left colonies left in the world by a country that defends other colonies from being colonies and frees them, but we cannot be free? And then I got pride. And then I got the culture and the history I needed to say, oh, there's value in existence. So to make a short story long, the Latin Kings was my Boy Scouts. And they had these five things. And I want to say them because gangs don't tell their five principles. Respect, honesty, unity, knowledge, and love. Woo! The 5 points of the almighty Latin King and Queen New York State Lion Tribe. Not one corporation could tell me their board got that written on their wall.
Well, that's the, I mean, it's such an interesting piece of the puzzle. Those are the five pillars of this organization that a lot of closed-minded people would look down on and not see what's actually going on in there. And I think there's a lot of things that an open-minded person who's in the business world, who's never been on the street side of things, can learn from you and from the story that you're telling, that a closed-minded person a closed-minded person really can't learn anything. But there's so many lessons in what you're talking about. Those five values, if those are taken off the wall, like you said, and they're lived out in any organization, whether it's a power group on the street, whether it's a church, whether it's a group of friends, whether it's an organization, whatever it is, those things, if those can be guiding values for that organization, then you're going to see real change come.
You said the important part. Those are five pillars. But pillars are built on a foundation. They hold something else up. But there's something under a pillar, right?
Yeah.
And the foundation is the values that give that the pillars that sentiment. And what I mean, values, choice, where you practice that. Your foundation, who you are as a human. So once I found that out and I put these five things, I told my community, my misled community, my misinformed community, the Latin Kings, how about if we live up to why we were created? In 1968, the Almighty Latin King Nation in Chicago was involved with the first thing that the Black Panthers created, and it was a movement with the Black movement for the Young Lords, for the Black Panthers, for all the Move movement. This was why we were created. This was drove us together. We wasn't a drug gang. We wasn't a cartel. That's not the origin of this power group. Let me repeat you why we were created. Forget about the capitalistic title that they gave you on gangland. Stop trying to prove who's the tougher street model of a gang, and why don't we convert ourselves to a public power for a voiceless people? And they ate that shit like cupcakes.
Why?
And because when your number one goal was taught out of prison because you didn't make, as a company, you didn't convert from a prison gang or power group to a street power group. So in 89, 90, when most of us came home, we didn't know how to adapt what we learned as a positive culture identity to transform it in the street. So we took the quick model of the mafia. Right. We invested in fear, right? Extortion, murder. Because that's what the American gangsters from the beginning, when they wore top hats, were about.
Right.
So then I say, hey, there's other examples what we could use our power groups for. So then I converted them to start listening to the Mothers Against Police Brutality, to the National Congress of Puerto Rican Rights with Richie Perez and ex-Young Lord. And I started surrounding them with people who knew the history of our culture. We let them in. So the three laws of innovation that I practice is reteach your community, right? Rebuild your self-community, which I mean the Latin Kings, I make the Grito Reggae, a newspaper, where I told all Latin Kings, if you cut hair, if you work in a store, if you babysit, I'm going to put it in the paper and we're going to advertise it. So if she works, instead of going to a childcare, she'll give it to a Latin queen. And that'll help you and finance yourself. And while you take care of her kids, she's taking care of her husband who's in Rockers Island, who doesn't got money. Come on, let's build our community. Let's support one another's dreams. And we built an ecosystem that self-supported, had messengers come in to inform us, but not to save us, but to guide us as the Almighty Latin King and Queen Nation, a brand that's become with a new beginning of what does love look like in a gang.
So what are those three principles? Reteach the people.
You reteach the people, right? Then you let the outside influence in. So the first thing a gang does is says, oh, you can't let us know our secrets. And what I told them, stupid, the secret is if you commit crime. But if you're not committing crime no more, why are we a secret?
Right.
So I went from a park in the dark, and I mandated that you find a church in your community that will donate you a space so Sunday you could have a Latin King meeting. It changes the whole environment in the board meeting.
Right.
Now instead in the dark, drunk and blunted, making decisions with young minds where you could beat them up easily, when you're in a church with lights, God, and all that on, you feel the presence somebody's watching.
It's a total game changer. It changes the spaces that we're in, influence our behaviors. They just do.
So if you have a board meeting, right? And I walk in as the Thomas Smolo, four people in the room, the CEO sitting in the corner looking, waiting for you to say something stupid. So where I walk in, there's coffee, everybody's conversating. The CEO is the one serving the drink, serving that what you need, two sugars. And then we walk in, and when the first thing he says is, the greatest thing of accomplishing what we're going to do is that we're going to get rid of the stupidest ideas by making the mistakes and learning from them. Let's go. Let's create.
That makes people feel safe. That makes people feel, okay, then let's throw my ideas out here. It's not like there's a high cost for failure when failure is an opportunity to learn.
Because my CEO, failure was death.
Right.
What are you using your corporation to face that? You face a little life change, you could fire, you get a parachute of $2 million, and you go home and you relax. I had to make my CEO believe, one, that the brand will never change. And that I wasn't going to take Levi's and sell it to Jordache. That I was going to rebrand his message, his package, and his face with something called hope, what he wanted, what he thought the brand was going to be. Not what it became. And if you trust me, I will never change the brand and its origin. But I will correct its errors and its misguidance of who we are. If you trust me. If he lets me run the boardrooms and as a CEO get the freak out my way.
We're talking about people, right? We're talking about people at the end of the day and what was going on in the street. I get that it's sort of it's a further degree of a lot of the stuff we're talking about, but the same emotions that are driving those actions are the same emotions that are driving the actions within an organization. And when we're talking about driving change again, whether it's a street gang or whether it's an organization, there's a certain formula that I think you have touched on and really explained here. And I think it's pretty profound, and it comes down to reestablishing like a why. Why do we exist? What are we meant to be doing here? And what are some guiding principles that can make sure that we know if we're staying on our path set towards some goal? And that goal is some, you know, whatever that star on the top of the mountain is, if it's hope, if it's legitimacy, if it's growing your organization and having some sort of societal impact, whatever that sort of purpose is at the top, you need some path to that purpose. And that's your mission. And those are guided by these principles that you're talking about. This is the formula to drive change in any kind of organization. And I just think it's so, it's highlighted and it's at such an extreme level in your story. And it's really a profound story. I appreciate you getting into it. Talk about some of the like resistance that you were met with as you came in with these sort of radical ideas that were disrupting the status quo.
So of course, when you become the messenger of a different message in any company, you're either, oh, the radical guy, the troublemaker, you know, he's going around. And so even in a product, whatever you're making, right? So I came in a product where the tough guy was the one that was looked up to. And I'm 5'6", I'm ball-legged, pigeon-toed. I'm not Tookie Williams. I mean, I'm not that gangster you fear that TV has taught you to. So when guys from jail and that old guard came, they were like, yo, you never, you know, what do you think? What do you mean this love looks like? And that let's march with the mothers. You know, you bring in heat. You bring in the cops to our brand. And our brand is about fear. It's about murder. What are you doing? You snitching? That was the contestants of the brand that was existing. And I said, hold up. The first thing is, when you address me by my title. My name is King Tone. And just because you did prison time doesn't give you the right to come out here and manipulate young minds that the way you did it is the way we're going to be successful. When quite the contrary, you'll probably be in prison in 90 days if the first thing you're going to do when you come out of prison is that you get 90 days. Have you seen your child? Did you talk to your wife? You got a job, stupid. Oh, so look, before you leave my kids, let's get you prepared. So the rule in the land, King, I started making rules and regulations for these guys to understand that, okay, you're tough. You got all that. You can make people fear you. But what does that accomplish if love could change all of that? So I'm going to love you first when you don't know how to love yourself as your boss. You need time out. You need to put Latin King on a shelf. You need to see why your daughter's missing you for the last year and a half. And I'm not going to look for you. And I'm not going to say why you haven't brought me my money. And I'm not going to make you come up. Because next time I see you, you better have a job. That's how you're going to stay home. Get it?
Yeah, it's a total flip. You just flip the whole thing.
And a bully knows how to respond to a punch.
Right.
He doesn't know how to respond to love. When it came through the method of fear, right? So a CEO makes products be produced by the fear you lose your job. I made the weak guy in the company believe if you speak out, if you tell these bullies where they stand, that one man ain't greater than the whole, and that we'd rather be working and in McDonald's and chilling and having meetings in the weekend with barbecues than all this violent shit. In the inside of us, we're just scared to say it because we're the land kings.
But you're just humans. It's how everyone feels.
And I made it safe to say, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go fight that dude. Why were you in a club 3 a.m? When you knew I was home going to work and now you're in a fight because you're drunk, don't call me. You know what? You're on your own, kid.
And that's not a betrayal.
No. That's consequence to his action. So I taught the land kings, we're not a force to save people from their stupid actions. We're a force to help them after they have done them. And to tell them, we're not going to kick you out. We're not going to beat you up. Let's find out why you messed up. But none of us are going to that battle with you anymore. If it's over, drugs, those negative things that we used to stand for. Now, if your grandmother and your wife walked down the stoop, and there was this drug little dealer that thought that he was going to sell on your stoop. And he came out snotty that he wasn't going to move. Call me.
It's different.
Because I could move him without a gun. I could move him without violence. I just remind him that my community isn't about one tough guy. It's about 3,000 together with one belief. You're no longer going to abuse the weak people in our neighborhoods. You're no longer going to own our stoops. You're no longer going to make the pizzeria a noisy place after it's time to go to bed. Because I'm not scared of you. You're my son. You're my cousin. You're my uncle's cousin's son. And you him. And I know them. And we ain't scared of you no more. I will slap your ass and take you home to your dad, Mr. Latin King.
It's a total paradigm shift.
I was 24 hours in the street. I protected the Lion Kings better than the Hasidic Jew protects his community in Brooklyn, New York. I cared when there was a 911. I cared when someone did me. I cared when they were hurting because my product needed a people that believed that someone was coming to help.
Yeah, the root of that tree was really a root of love and servanthood.
You lost. Nobody has really led you to a cause, to a movement, to a belief that love doesn't hurt. It does got hope. So you said, who was my greatest opponent? That's the gang. The second one was government. Mr. Giuliani was the CEO of New York. And if you know, it was stop and frisk procedure.
Right.
And it was, let's put guns in schools. But there's always the Volpe case with Louima, the Haitian, that got a plunger in his butt in a precinct. There was also the Bias case where Lavoie choked a kid in front of his parents in the Bronx. There was 33 mothers of different races crying of police brutality, and why Giuliani was giving out awards to the same people that committed those transactions. And nobody would defend them, not the church, not the government, not the politician. And I said, yo, Latin teens, we've got a cause. And they said, what? Let's go talk to the mothers against police brutality. Let's tell them that we'll march with them. Let's tell them that when the bullies, the cops come, we're going to stand next to them. And they ain't doing nothing no more. And we ain't going to grab the mic. We're going to give it to you, mama, and tell your story, because the news is coming to see the gangster. But the news is going to hear the mother, her pain, her cry, and how nobody defended her but the bad guy.
You're like a PR genius.
So the bad guy became the good guy in the media when they tried to demonize the movement. It empowered it. The next thing I learned, even though the outside influence ain't going to profit me 100%, but it's going to bring the message and the hope and my people's goals to a task, I'm willing to make a sacrifice and let you in. Because if what I teach is strong enough and the people buy in, your Jehovah Witness can't change me into a Christian. And a Muslim can't change a king to, he's founded in his belief, not because of fear, it's because the prophecy believed. And that's when Giuliani feared me. I was writing a roadmap how to unite the past movement with past messengers and credible messages to the new movement that was discarded as the new rap era with pants down and don't listen to nobody, when the truth was nobody ever left us a roadmap. So I told them, forgive us, and I told us, listen to them, and I put 7,000 young adults in the Puerto Rican parade, Zulu Nation, Latin Kings, Bloods, Nietas, marching in the public saying, we stand united. We're against police, stop and frisk surgery. Giuliani is not our savior. We did this with community meetings, with safe spaces, making rules to the drug dealers, making rules in our community enforced by us. And our brand changed. Mothers were bringing me their grandchildren. The school was telling me, could I come speak? There's no greater feeling when your brand brings, it brings the promise, and it brings what you hope for as a human being when you created the brand. Now, if you say it's Clorox, I don't care what it is. You promised that my whites will be whiter. You promised that you won't keep telling me it's new when it's the same shit in the bottle. Tell me, I'll tell you why it's failing. You promised me it's Clorox, you perfected, where now you got Clorox for colored clothes. Thank you, Felicity. Customer buys into that brand. Before, Clorox used to stain and make my green clothes with a white and yellow stain, and then they listen and say, I don't even want it in my house. So they made a product that didn't affect the color.
Yeah, we're talking about trust. That's that foundation of any brand.
I never put Clorox in my house. I hated it. I'm just showing you something. Because I've seen they've grown, they kept their ethics that it started with making stains go on white. They got it for other products, so I trust them now in my house that when I don't want that brand, that they created one that serves my purpose, they didn't lie to me. It's still that formula disguised as something that when I used it, it made my color clothes stain.
Right.
So if you do that with a kid, with love, what it looks like in public policy, if your brand stays to the ethics and you as a CEO tell the community, I want to make money, but I want to share it. And I want to share it with those that help me the most. And 90% of them ain't in my CEO room and they're not the board members. It's used down here. If you help me fulfill this dream, I'm going to keep telling these ethics. That I always love you. I always respect you. I always hear you. I always take your step. And you're going to profit with me. as much as I can to keep us going and being this movement in the community of a trusted brand.
Why do you think, so you brought love into a street gang, right? This is a bunch of tough guys, a bunch of guys on the street that you said their old values were murder, intimidation, and fear, and all that kind of stuff.
Real quickly, that wasn't their old values. That's the values they started believing in.
Understood.
Because it's what got them what they wanted.
Understood. Yeah, yeah. That.
And I'm not trying to protect them, but that's what happened.
No, you're right. There was that shift, and that's, I'm just saying, that's what you stepped into. That's the culture you stepped into.
Exactly.
And you get back to like the pure essence of it, what that sort of foundation was supposed to be. We have companies across the nation where most people are working that they don't have the sort of extreme elements that you're dealing with, or that you dealt with. You have leaders in these organizations that don't have the stresses of police knocking on the door, potentially taking them to jail and so forth. And yet, why is it so hard for them to even say the word love in a corporate setting? Why is it so hard for them in something that's so much less extreme to bring some of this love into their organization? Because we've seen the kind of transformative value that it can have on people, period.
So two things, right? So Clinton Lacey, I'll just bring that name in. He's my partner in this credible messenger thing where we believe someone that was a gangster, someone that's an ex-felon, someone, anybody that's in that community that belonged to him, has a history, and that in some way became that folk hero in that town or that city, and goes through a turmoil and then comes back, stays in his community, reinvests and change, that these people are all around, and these are the penicillin to violence. And this is the penicillin for the justice system to use as they're in to say, trust us, believe in us, because we're coming with your heroes, with your doctors, with your community. We're not regenifying you, believing that to make you right, you have to renew your community by removing yourself.
Right. That's an important point. That's a really important point.
Yes. So that, and once you do that, and as a credible messenger, you provide that for the system, the kid buys in, right? But it's in any corporation, right? You got to be the same. You got to be trust that who's your credible messenger? Who's the one to that North Star? So the North Star to me, Clinton Lacey, for Grow Up, Grow Out, and credible messenger is, right? What does love look like in public policy? The justice system believes that it is the healing system and the solvent of crime and violence in the community. Wrong. The Justice Department is where money comes into that could let it flow into community organizations called Grow Up, Grow Out, Black Lives Matter, and invest to grassroots leaderships that invest in the neighborhood and heal it because they're from the neighborhood, instead of us bringing in outside corporate white ties with these nonprofit fake foundations with millions of dollars that I've never seen in my prison.
Yep, with zero credibility.
Now you could King Tone into a prison. I don't gotta tell nobody in that prison who I am, what's my brand, and what I represent. Every gangster in this world knows my name. And they know when I come in peace. And I come to help them rebrand their brand. And I come to tell them, you don't have to be who you told. You're not this product. Let's find out your history. The first thing I always do, I trust what I already have. And then in my boardrooms, I introduce the new guard to the old guard. And I tell them, look, Latin King Leader, or even now in my credible messenger, I didn't start building my organization from the top down. I was already a CEO. I knew what Grow Up, Grow Out had to do. I built it. So I started building from the credible messenger up. So first I got my street credible guys who needed to be polished. They wasn't raw. They needed to go through my trainings to restorative justice. I knew that. But those were the most important piece. I didn't need a program director. I didn't need that title, that expense yet. I was playing all those roles. Because what love looks like in public policy is the owner of the company going to the smallest guy and say, I need you first. Without you, I don't represent your community. Mr. Sean Branch from DC, who did 22 years and became an author, and you're a hero, and you're in one of the biggest cases in DC. Could you let me hire you so when I walk in DC, because I'm from New York, you become my credible messenger while I come bring hope into your neighborhood.
Right.
Get it?
I do.
Oh, God. Then I teach the old God, but don't you come with you, the Sean Branch, the hero and the glorified that listen to Grow Up, Grow Out, or else. Come as the messenger that says, hey, now we got new thoughts with this new generation. Could you help me? What is your idea as helping this community? So I take the newer guys that are dealing with credible messengers that didn't do 20 years, and these college graduates that love their community, never committed violence, like my guy, Sean Branch. He's now with Landon. And Landon never did time, but he works for Grow Up, Grow Out. But I got him last, and he's my program director. Because now I needed someone who knew how to take data, create what Grow Up, Grow Out needed to grow. But first I needed the validation in the street. You see, my brand is different from your brand. It couldn't start in the corporate office with a computer and a desk. I had to build it in the community.
Right.
I had to be led by the community. And then they gave me each part of what they called Grow Up, Grow Out in D.C. Now, when you see Grow Up, Grow Out in Seattle, I look like Seattle. It never looks like King Tone in the Latin Kings, black and gold. Or that's what I believe in, and that's my heart's brand. I'm a Latin King. But Grow Up, Grow Out is my brand now that I sell. That 19 tone, the brand I created, is the in into power groups to lead them back
right
to the table in the community to tell them their needs and how we could help them to transform.
I think it's interesting and kind of telling, you know, it kind of speaks to your heart on how you, just how you describe this stuff. You acclimate toward the assets, so to speak, in your company, so to speak, are the people. It's not the desks and the computers. And I think in today's knowledge economy, the assets are not a bunch of machines, they're people. But there's still this old sort of top-down, militant almost mentality that most organizations have in how they acclimate to their people. And I think what you do a nice job of is talking about how if we can break these structures that the people have sort of placed on themselves, and you can show them a different way, you really open up the potential for them to unleash and to put their God-given gifts to work without having to crack a whip over them or walk around with a riding crop. And it's just, I don't understand why more organizations don't understand this sort of people game like you do.
Change brings fear. So now in Grow Up, Grow Out, and with Clinton Lacey, why we're unique, right? I help the streets understand the penicillin that Clinton Lacey, my partner, is telling DYRS, which is the youth probation of the youth in DC, healing them, telling them, look, you've been misled. This case management that's led by what I think, what I say, and we're the directive, that's all stopped. Y'all broken. I as Clinton Lacey, a man raised and know this work, with the suit and tie and the objectives that you could listen to, I'm going to help you understand the language of the credible messenger. And then I'm telling the street, listen, we got a new guy up there. He's called What Love Looks Like in Public Policy. They're making this penicillin that's going to heal us. And then my guys are going to say, the first thing I say, yeah, it's the same people who made the last one that made us sick. So now I got to say, yeah, we know. But that's why I'm the new salesman. That salesman was white with a suit and tie, right? I'm King Tone with three felons. Never had an opportunity. Clean Lacey gave it to me to show you we're not going to force you to take the pill. We're going to show you how it'll help you. How? I took it already. It's called hope. Look, I feel better. I got my own business. I own a car. I got 8 employees. You know Sean Branch? Yeah, that's my neighborhood. Yeah, he works for me. Sean Branch worked for you?
Credibility.
No, he took the pill. He didn't even know it.
Right.
Because he seen the messenger. Then he questioned him. And he go, oh, no. What you mean? Well, so what? They fooled you the last time. Trust me. I'm King Tone. And I said, oh, yeah, I'm scared of them too. So before you took it, guess what? Because I love you, I took it first.
Power.
Clinton Lacey is the truth. So you see, I'm his credible messenger. Now, when I walk in with 6 credible messengers that are raw, don't look like diamonds, still look like coal, And they look at him, oh, go through the metal detector. And I break out the badge. And I go, no, let him through. And they go, whoa, who are you? I'm King Tone. Don't worry, I got a pass to the 10th floor. Oh, we got a call. Don't worry, you still don't know what love looked like. So she gets offended, but I walk him through. And you see the credible messenger pick up his head. He like, oh, I was scared for a minute. They're going to treat me like I was in prison again. Don't worry, you with me. We're taking you to the 10th floor.
So that in itself elevates those credible messengers. I mean, it's the feedback loop.
It empowered them.
Yeah.
And it humbled the system to realize, uh-oh, somebody's breaking the box.
Right.
And here comes that character, King Tone, that Clinton Lacey hired, that ex-felon, to shake the box and make us uncomfortable. And then he's bringing these other crooks, hold your bag. But I'm on the 10th floor. I'm with the North Star's representative. And then he tells my crew, I've got you back. Don't worry, that's only going to last for a while. They don't know what love looks like. I'm teaching them. But now I need you to go to Restore the Turk boot camp, Credible Messenger boot camp. I need you to get your SNL skills, get your computer skills up, because you're going to now sit at the board meeting that makes the life plan for the kid you're in charge of. Woo-hoo-hoo.
It's exciting, man. You're making such an impact.
I just want you to know that's the boardroom. That's the scientist for good and love and respect. And now with credible messengers at the CEO's thinking tank, and he's a little lost, he's a little scared, but he's saying, ooh, this is what it feels like to hear thinkers think.
Yeah, I mean, you've driven sort of more change and had more impact in the lives that you've touched than I think a lot of leaders in the corporate setting have on the lives that they touch. And I'd love for you to kind of speak into that a little bit.
Well, you know, like now, I'm in my apartment and I own a house. I'm in quarantine and I live Grow Up, Grow Out. But Grow Up, Grow Out is like any big corporation with a small budget. So like Facebook, right? On my Messenger, I close it every 3 months for 2 months annually. Because I get over 6,000 to 7,000 messages of ex-gangbangers. So I got a caseload on Facebook. I've got 336 kids in D.C. I got 36 in one youth facility, and I got 46 in another. That's another caseload. And I got my junior who's deaf, who's been out of school, and my wife, who you juggle. That's the grow up the brand. So my wife wants to kill King Tone so I could be a husband. But if I kill King Tone, my wife don't got a husband that makes a CEO salary. Because he created a dream, right?
Right.
And then my foundation, my church tells me, you're involved with both wrong sides. You got to be a Latin king again. You need to come fix us because you were the last great thing. You were our Pule. We hated you then, but we understand your message now. We've grown up. And I tell them, I could only be relevant. I can't get involved.
So yeah, you got to maintain that balance, because you now have a much more complex life. There's more facets to it, and you got to maintain that balance and walk that tightrope.
So if you're the CEO of your company and the owner, don't be a board member, be an owner.
And what's that difference? What is that difference? Let's talk about that.
The boardroom didn't create your dream and your love of why you did this. Lacey didn't create Grow Up, Grow Up. You get it? My North Star is relevant with his North Star. And because we were capable to hear each other's what made us strong and what we didn't agree with, but we knew a safe space for power groups was involved with the credible messenger, we empowered our brand by uniting ourselves and thinking outside the box of ourselves. But the North Star then became safe space for power groups with credible messengers healing our community, what love looked like in public policy.
Yeah, it's you guys are sort of two branches on a tree with the same root.
Then we go up and we say, so we're going to come into this Justice Department that got a box. How are we going to deal with it? we break every box we encounter. We will not be the box. Clint Lacy, you promised me you're going to be Fidel. People don't like Fidel, but now Clint says, yeah, because you're my chair. All right, so we're going to fight the box. Even though we will not discriminate and hate the box for being who they are, because the box only knows that way. So instead of being a radical outside shouter activist, I've learned that I got the roles for those, but right now is my turn to teach CEOs to tell their companies to respect, have honesty, give knowledge, give action, and most of all, give love. So if you turn to Primetime, go see a video. They got me. And I'm just saying quick. It was filmed in 1997. And an opponent was there of another brand, and he was in the street, and he wanted to destroy my company. And the cameras were there, and the world was there. And they said, what the hell is going to say now? We got him on tape with his arch enemy. And I said, I'm not here to kill you. I'm here because I love you. And if I was here to help you, you'd be dead, everybody in the community, but that's not my goal, because I'm King Tone, and I stand for what love looks like with you. It's on tape. That was the end of my career as a tough guy. And the demise where everybody who lived on fear said, we could take over the Lion King. He's weak.
Interesting.
And I made her so strong because Malin said, oh, he forgives people? They're not that scary. Look at that guy. He's small. He's short. He's fat. He's screaming on everybody. Oh, this is what the feds are scared of? Come on. Who's he? Get it?
I do.
I humanized my brand. I brought it back home. I reminded them that we were not the Lion King. That was Antonio Fernandez. He was Hector Ramirez. He was Juan Garcia. Those were your kids and your cousins. We just forgot. And we just started listening to the brand giving us from the government. And I remember who they were in our community. They were our kids.
Right.
So I united that.
Right. It's bigger than you.
And that's all. You know, I know it's long, but I that's what companies got to understand. The people who buy your products is your the most important thing. And then the people who give those people the product you promise as the CEO, your dream of a table that gains strength and nobody will fall, of a car that's more economic. Whatever it is, guys, stay to the values of your dream as a CEO. Then let the board members invest in understanding what me and Clinton Lacy said. We will never be in the box, so that's the non-negotiable. Grow up, grow out, non-negotiable. We're not going to come in your company and think like the box. That's the thing I won't sacrifice. We could do business after that.
So let's, this has been great. What advice would you give to a leader? Let's say they're in a 5,000 person organization or a 20,000 person organization, and they're not at the top of the organization. They're not the CEO, or they're not an executive, but they're working on a team. And this is sort of a typical company that maybe is dollar focused, profit over people type of a company. What advice would you give to that person to start driving change in their world?
Well, first of all, right, in their world, you know who's who in your production line and any very level of your company. And usually the people tell you who's the exciting guy, who's the most worker, right? It's what you trust. You take the data and the time, you listen to it, and then you explore your company, the one you love, the one you said, that when it was just 10 and you made it personal. Like my 8 credible messengers, we got texts that were a group text. When a kid fights, we know. When a kid gets shot, 24 hours, we just talk to each other. We're family. So those 8, you tell them which 10 you deal with that are great. Oh, she's crazy, and he's this, and he's that. And you take that evaluation, you bring them into a room. And you first say, have your first town hall as a CEO. There's some things I want to do to this North Star. And I've been here 20 years. I got 8,000 a year, and it looks cool. But somehow I feel I've lost my identity in my brand and what I wanted to do, and I didn't know you guys. The new guys that I got around me are just the new voices that thought about the box, and I thought they were trouble, and I got recognized. Then you tell the old guy, look, I need you to meet in the room with them. I know they're a little irky and they're different, but our brand is suffering here, and I thought I knew it all, but I got to get back to understanding y'all. You know my product. You helped me build it all these years. Let's start making it new again. Tell me what you think, what the people, what you hear, and what you feel. And let's renew this. And I'm going to make a safe space. And like I said, don't worry. Your biggest mistake is the one that's going to get us to our greatest victory.
So I love that. There's two things I want to touch on right now. At the start of that, you kind of led with a lot of like humility and vulnerability. And I find that there's a lot of strength in vulnerability. So I'd love you to speak to that. Why do people have such a hard time leaning into that vulnerability, which is really, to me, not only conveys a lot of humanity and is actually very, very ultimately persuasive and very strong. Why is that so hard to lean into that for folks, especially people in power?
Man code, machismo.
Yeah.
What a boss supposed to look like? What does the suit and tie represent? You put the box around you what you were taught.
Right.
When the bell rings, you go to your next class. So as the owner and CEO, once you accomplish your dream in a blue shirt and jeans, you know the people who are buying your products start telling you, hold up, what do you mean you're Bill Gates? What, are you stupid? Come on, put the jacket on. Put the tie on. You're the owner now, son. Act like one. Act like you've been here before. So you see grassroots leadership try to convert itself to match the shark tank. You get my point? So first of all, you fear you won't fit in the box that you think can make your dreams. Because for me to think inside that box, that's what got me here, is a whole bunch. It was the jeans. It was the sneakers. It was the community. It was the bid. It was all that suffering, all those wrong choices that made me who I am today. It was my hoodie. When I was scared, that's what got me to be the CEO of Grow Up, Grow Out.
Yeah,
I'll never forget it.
We're talking about authenticity at some level. We're talking about
what I'm saying, be yourself.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. The company, if you're the owner, who could take your place?
I love it.
That's why me and Lacey are so involved with the kids, not with our staff. They are product. That's who we help. Their misery is what we're supposed to heal. So how can we depend on the middle guy? The only way we could trust them if we are the bottom guy.
Right.
We become the kid in the company and tell them as we go through the kid each case, if we could explain where they're messing up and then trust them again to go back to the safe space and heal that. Not, hey, you lost your job. This is what I heard the kid is going through.
Right.
And I went through it with them because I went through the process. Hey, we're still failing here, case manager. We're still failing here. Project returns with the credible messenger. You need to perfect that. How do you know? I went through your three circles for a month. You see me. I've been around. This is where we fail. Come on. This is where you can fix that. I know. Here's the team. Start working.
Right. I also want to talk about, you've talked about safe space a lot. Safe spaces. Why is it so hard for organizations? I mean, it's really everywhere, I guess, but why is it so hard for organizations to create those safe spaces for their employees when there's so much great that can come from it?
Why do we close playgrounds at 7 o'clock when in the old days they were open to 3 a.m? Why can't a kid have a playground in New York City? Why is Central Park so revered? Safe spaces where people relax have been led to think that it was unproductive. That someone to work has to look miserable, can't be explorative, can't really let his mind explore. That's why I love trips. When I used to do this training in Europe, I love Europe. They know how to relax.
Yeah.
In a boardroom. You get what I mean?
I do.
You know, Sweden, England, you have your different cultures. But what I learned, all of them, what they were starving for was a story that wasn't made up, but that was real. So my fear was, is my story good enough? It's a gang story. And I'm using a gang story to teach corporate world where are they slacking and what do they need to do. And then one guy told me, look, I make thousands of dollars and I got to make up a story every different speech. Yours is the truth.
Yeah, it's real. It's authentic.
He says, stop trying to be somebody else and that your story ain't good enough. You're the only one that doesn't have to go at night and think about creating a scenario to match a teaching in a business. You got it, kid. Relax. And I got my confidence as the CEO of that formula, right?
Right.
Oh, wow. You know, I don't have to change. I don't have to think I got to make my story better. Entice it. The people love it at its original form.
Right.
So if I'm at that, what I'm trying to say is King Tone, if I was feared, people would think they would have to replace me to be free. When I was loved as the CEO, people said, when those gangsters come and everybody, let's remember his teaching, that no one man is stronger than the group. And if King Tone gets hurt like King, You know that thing about respect, honesty, unity, and lust? We could again get in trouble with murder, fear, extortion. So when the bad guys come, jump in front of the Buddha because we're not scared of him. We love him and we need him.
Right.
We can't let the bored out boredom. We can't let the tough guy scare him because when he eats, we all eat.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest lies that are told, one of the biggest lies that is told is, you know, what is it better to be loved or feared as a leader? And I think the common answer is feared. It's great to be both, but if you had to pick one, feared is the right answer. And that never really made sense to me. I always thought it was love, and it's great to hear that you think that too.
No, and real quick, every theory, right, I believe no man should make a statement that isn't proven or doesn't make sense. So I was a Lion King, like, kids like to say, oh, I'm a warrior. I said, listen, when you were born, if I woke up in your crib and I pick you up and I smash your head, you might have warrior blood, but you still can't fight. You're still a soldier. Warriors earn when you go through a war and you do it. And you become a warrior because you were a soldier. And you know the consequence of being a soldier is death. So a warrior understands to fear war than to entice and love it. Because he knows the consequence of that being a warrior and a soldier. So my point being, as a CEO, you must be the same. I'm the owner, but I can't exist without you. So as King Tone, I told the people, listen, and like I said, so there's two models that my guys all know in my company. When you walk into a meeting, the first thing I better hear all you say is break the box. Because where we're entering, everybody we deal with is in a box. Don't you sell out on me and start sounding like the box in that meeting because I'll ask you to leave. That I don't accept. Because then you show me you're ready to compromise. My first rule is, as a team, we never go inside the box.
Right.
As the owner, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He knows the non-negotiable, so then it ain't fear, it's choice. Am I still part of this North Star that says, right? This is the rules to be with Tone and grow up.
Yeah, and then there's security in adhering to that simple framework.
Let's go in, let's listen and everything. Let's take the information, what I sent you in here to do, let's learn from it, let's give them our feedback, and let's walk out. But always let them know we're here to challenge the box. Because that's my product.
Right. I appreciate your time. I mean, this has been a great conversation. I had this kind of expectation for it and it totally exceeded it. Where can people find you? Where can they learn more about you and grow up, grow out, and this amazing business and initiative that you're driving in the community?
So we got www.com, grow up, grow out. We got our website, right? And if not, you know, I got my mylifetone@gmail.com. And you can reach out to me because we're building. Grow Up Grow Out now is 5 years old. And I got 8 full-time employees. I got 1 part-timer. I got all of them are ex-returning citizens. They all got 3 felonies or more. They all work in an institution that jail said they will not allow felons in. Me and Clinton Lacey has legislated law with the mayor that now lets ex-felons return and walk the prisons where our youth are to tell them after 22 years, this is not where you want to be. If you told somebody 10 years ago that Quinto got a pass that opens jail cells, a warden would have told you crazy.
I love it.
So believe, have a dream, stick to your brand, CEO, stick to the values and what makes you rich. It's not the money. Is when you see a production line that loves you and it's accumulating a product and it's helping everybody, plus you're making money and you're having a picnic with $8,000. I used to throw a party every 30 days with the Latin Kings on 125th in St. Mary's in New York State. 3,000 to 7,000 youth. They only gave me the space once. Do you hear me? And I used to party with them, celebrate their accomplishments, strong and hard. Every 30 days with no budget. You could do anything if you put your heart and you use your people the right way and you let them know that we can only accomplish this dream together for this brand, for this purpose, for this North Star. And I think that's what Grow Up, Grow Out it is for the youth and the public system. Where my love look like in public policy.
I love it, man. Thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for joining us on The Ethics Expert. This was a phenomenal conversation. Your passion is contagious. We just got a lot here, so I appreciate you, Tom.
All right, I hope you're all good, and thank you for your time, and I hope you got a little information. I'm humbled.